talking all things training, sport performance, and business, and covering the most important topics to enhance your training and better your career. I'm your host, Jared DeFilippo, and this is Muscles and Management, brought to you by Challenger Strength, where we build your body and your business. Hello, everyone. I'm Jared DeFilippo. Welcome to episode 6 of Muscles and Management. Really excited to have on Rob Friedman, known to you as the Pitching Ninja on Twitter and Instagram. Welcome on, Rob.
Hey, it's glad to be here.
Thank you for coming on. So before we get started, I kind of wanted to just touch on, I guess, how Rob and I first, I guess, quote unquote, met on Twitter. I guess almost 2 years ago now at this point, from my memory at least.
Has it been that long?
Yeah, so from my end, I remember stumbling upon your account. I think you had had, like, you know, it's a lot at the time, 9 or 10,000, but compared to now, not that many. But you had just started, you were blasting out a lot of GIFs with the MLB pitchers, and it was, I knew of you as like the nasty pitching GIF guy, basically. And I remember, funny enough, you know, you would, obviously you post like so often now, but at the time it was, you know, a couple, you know, every couple days. So every few days, I remember I had an athlete of mine when I just started training, we would look, you know, at your account every couple days while he was on like his rest periods during his sets, and we would look at all the pitching. So that's my memory of you when I first saw your account. And then from my perspective, I just remember, you know, tagging you in a couple posts, and, you know, we kind of started going from there, really.
That's kind of how I remembered. I remember you you posted some interesting stuff, and one of the things that I'm always trying to do is get my followers kind of cutting edge stuff that can help them, especially people that are sharing things for free and not just, you know, marketing to people and stuff. So that really caught my eye.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I owe a lot to you. I've said this to you before, but as, you know, someone that was just starting out at the time, you know, I don't think I'd be where I am today in terms of my, you know, my exposure and my personal following on Twitter if it wasn't for you sharing, you know, stuff early on. So I really appreciate that, and you know, that
like
meant a lot to me.
So
I
myself as a kingmaker. Just kidding. Totally made up.
Yeah, no, it's just been really cool from my perspective, you know, seeing, I guess, almost from the beginning. Like, you had really just kind of started the account. I remember when I stumbled upon you, so it's been awesome just kind of seeing it grow.
Thank you. It's been fun on my side, too.
Yeah. So I guess my first question for you would be, you know, what prompted you to start the account? You know, what was your, you know, what kind of got you going with it?
So I've been coaching for a long time. I coach a lot of youth teams as well as travel teams up in East Cobb and high school, and including my own kid, but you know, other kids as well. And one thing that I did, because, you know, I wasn't a stud baseball player growing up, but I wanted to make sure I didn't teach anything that was going to mess folks up. So that was my first key.
Mm-hmm.
Was kind of to ask questions, to learn, to not teach just what I was taught, and to just keep probing and stuff. One thing, I mean, unfortunately, I'll admit it, I have a legal background. I'm a lawyer, but don't hold that against me. I will not arrest you during this call.
Good, glad to hear that.
But so I really want to delve deeper in than most, you know, than most folks would. And I'm never afraid to ask questions. I mean, I don't know all the answers, and I don't a lot of people were pretending kind of like they knew all the answers, or acting like they did, and maybe teaching what they were taught. And I kind of wanted to break out of that mold, and I never wanted to leave anybody worse than when they started, when I started coaching them. So that was really my goal, was to make it fun, to communicate with folks, and to try to teach good information. So as I went down that path, I asked a lot of questions. I learned a lot from some great coaches out there. Learned a lot then from, you know, watching what real pitchers did, and maybe second guessing what some coaches had said, and said, you know, that's not really what I see. I don't think there's one way to teach pitching. I don't think everybody moves a certain way. I don't think there's as many absolutes as people are trying to say there are. And most of these people are people that are kind of trying to market their services. Like, this is the key to pitching. And it may be the key to their pitching. I don't think they're lying as far as what they're doing. But I think it's doing people a disservice to say there's one size that fits all for everybody.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. So really the key of what I was doing is trying to, I mean, basically real time, you're seeing kind of what I was looking at I was sharing it with everybody so that they may be able to second guess, you know, coaches or at least learn a little bit from what other pitchers were doing. And basically, I never wanted what I was learning. I never wanted to keep it just for myself, because that, you know, then it just stops with me. I had a lot of time to delve into it, you know, money to spend on equipment and stuff, and going to camps and all that various cool things that other people didn't have, and I wanted to really share it with everybody so it didn't stop with me.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's cool to be someone that has the resources to kind of go through those experiences yourself and be able to kind of share some of those experiences with people that, like you said, the equipment and the showcases, you know, a lot of people don't have, you know, the means to do a lot of the stuff like that, and it's nice to be able to see it through someone's eyes who can do it. So I think that's awesome.
Thanks. And yeah, that's the part that drives me crazy is the never-ending quest for scholarships or to make it, and parents, you know, rightfully want to help their kids fulfill their dreams, but in the end, you know, they may be hurting everything, and they may be taken advantage of by people just marketing to them because they don't want to see their kids fail. Nobody does. Nobody wants their kids to. They want to give their kids everything they can.
Yeah.
And I view everybody as one of my kids. So it's this weird thing that I wanted to help a lot of folks.
Yeah, that's an awesome goal for why you started it. I guess my next question would be: when did you realize it was going to kind of get as big as it has? Like, at what point was there a moment where you were like, "Oh, this is kind of quote unquote blown up," I guess, so to speak.
You know, I still don't know. I try to do something every day. One of my keys is getting a little bit better every day, learning a little bit every day, getting, you know, that 1% better. If I tell my kids to do it, I'm going to do it. So it kind of crept up on me, I think.
Yeah. I feel the same way personally too. Not to interrupt you, I can relate to that 1,000% with my own journey. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, because you're telling all these folks to get better, and then you're saying, "No, I know everything. I'm good." That can't be right. I mean, I see you learning, and you're asking questions, and online. And the thing I like about Twitter is people can challenge you, and you can challenge other people.
Yep.
And learn from it. If you don't listen, you don't learn.
Yeah,
so I'll challenge people, but also listen to their answers because I think it's interactive as opposed to talking at people, and I think you do the same thing.
Yeah, I like one of my mentors early, this guy known as Jim Diesel Smith. He does a certification with Joe DeFranco. I learned a lot from those guys, and he has this thing he talks about, the white belt mentality. No matter how, you know, well-known you are or how experienced you are as a coach, it's going into everything with, like, you know, that thought process that I can learn something and that I don't know everything. So I like that a lot.
And I think that's great, because I think that's the better use of social media versus talking at people and just getting into, you know, fight after fight after fight and going, no one ever wins those fights. It's just a mess. It's like watching a car wreck.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, I'll do it. But I'll do it only if I think somebody's, like, deliberately saying wrong things, or they're just not listening, and it just gets frustrating.
Yeah, or they're just being disrespectful.
Right. Yeah.
I've commented on one of your posts last week, I think it was. Some guy, you know, there was a lefty up there just throwing absolute gas, and some people just you know, sitting back from the bleachers just throwing stones. And sometimes I just get into those moods that I'm sure you do too, where it's like, I'm not going to let that happen. It's just it's ridiculous.
Yeah, the dude was throwing 99 and just throwing the absolute piss out of the ball, and people were like,
"Oh, sick mechanics or whatever."
Right, as the same way. The good thing is on Flat Ground's account, I generally sit back and let other people fight those battles because I want to stand, you know, sit on the sidelines and let everybody else talk versus me talking at people, because that gets old.
Yeah, no, absolutely, I agree with that. Speaking of beefs and run-ins, something I wanted to talk about, because I kind of got involved in this a little bit myself, the KFC Barstool incident. What was that, about a year ago, maybe? No, a little, I don't know, you tell me.
April, okay.
Before you get into it, I will say, funny enough, he wrote an article about it when it all happened, and one of the screenshotted tweets he put from people, you know, kind of going at him was from me, actually. And I was going in on him, because I honestly took that personally, because, you know, like I said, you would help me a lot and you know, grow, and you know, I don't obviously personally know you other than Twitter, but you know, you were someone I liked a lot, and it really, you know, annoyed me to see all that take place, and also from the fact that you were helping so many kids and coaches, and it was just ridiculous for that to be something that at the time seemed like it might have ended all of that. So I kind of want to just open that to you and get your perspective on all of that and how it might have helped you become, you know, even bigger to help more people, have a bigger platform.
I think it ended up being kind of a blessing in disguise, and actually the whole story ended well. It ended with some DMs between me and KFC, and we just kind of buried that whole hatchet and actually worked together on some GIFs afterwards. And it started when I tweeted a GIF of Noah Syndergaard throwing a ridiculously nasty pitch. It looked like it was sucked up in a hurricane.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah, and I slowed it down, so I knew it was mine. And he had tweeted, he's a big Mets fan, and then he retweeted it, and then actually ripped the video from it and sent it out himself. And he thought, because he originally retweeted it, that it was okay to use it himself, you know, to basically take it and put it out there. And then as he did that, there were a bunch of people, my followers, that were like, hey, you can't just steal Ninja's stuff. And so I looked at him, I'm like, dude, come on, man, don't steal my stuff. And he's like, well, it's not, you know, it's just, it became a pissing match that I don't really like getting into.
Yeah.
It's just not a fun dispute to ever have and to both people just digging their heels in. So it ended up a bunch of his followers, this is from what I believe, I don't have any of the receipts on that, but a bunch of his followers contacted MLB.
Of course, it's Barstool. They're pretty religious. The followers are pretty religious, so they'll do whatever they have to get back at somebody who's butting heads with one of theirs, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly that. So that goes down. And don't get me, there are some fantastic folks over there.
Absolutely.
During this whole thing, Dallas Braden was unbelievably good, and he still stays in touch. And he just loves the game, so he's got a big personality and just loves the sport. And those are the people I like.
They do some great baseball stuff over there. Starting Nine podcast. I don't know if you've heard of Jared Carrabas. He's a big.
He's one of my favorite guys.
He's the best. I love him. Go ahead. He's great.
I would say he's one of my favorite baseball follows because he is what the sport is about, with all that energy and generally really positive, you know, loud fan who loves the game and it's really contagious. I love watching his stuff. So it became a relatively big dispute. I went to sleep that night and woke up in the middle of the night because I don't remember. I generally wake up in the middle of the night every night.
Yeah.
It's not an unusual thing. I looked at my phone and my phone was blowing up and everybody was like, what happened to your Twitter account? I'm like, oh, crap. So I check it and sure enough, it was down. And I'm still getting notifications, but I'm not getting any. I can't tweet. I can't tell anybody I'm getting notifications. So I just ended up going back to sleep. I'm like, you know, this will work out because I know, being a lawyer, I know that I was never making money off it. I was never trying to make
exactly.
money off it.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to help you. I'm trying to expand the game. And I knew that it would work out well. And if it didn't, you know what? I had a few more hours to spare during the day that I wasn't on Twitter. So it wouldn't be the worst thing either way. But it ended up working out great. So it ended up, Twitter did what they should do when they get a notice and took the account down. MLB did what they should do, which is if they have a copyright dispute, they have every right to try to enforce it. I mean, nobody did anything terribly wrong in that situation. It's just that MLB contacted me later on and said, actually, Jeff Passan wrote a great article on the whole dispute and had some conversations with MLB. And basically it was, we love what you're doing too. So we'd like to come up with a way to get you back up. And they did. And it all worked out great. And not only that, but at that point, Ben, I was on the total up and up. I didn't have to worry about, you know, let's only put out a couple a day because I don't want to, you know, MLB's kind of mean about their copyrights. I want to make sure everything I do is this way. So it actually allowed me to come back more with a vengeance almost and really excited about what I was doing. So it energized me to do more.
Yeah.
Especially since I saw so many people contacting me, players, front office guys, and everybody was like, oh my God, why is his account gone? It was my favorite account. And I didn't know that. I mean, you know, I'm just sitting there putting stuff out, and I knew I was doing pretty well. I thought people liked it. I didn't realize how much they liked it until it was down.
Yeah, no, uh, I remember just, you know, someone watching from the outside, and I got involved a little bit. I remember he actually, KFC, responded to something I said to him. I can't remember what it was. I kind of was just like, listen, man, you're trying to get rid of an account that, you know, is helping a lot of people. And that was kind of the premise and, you know, reasoning behind why I was kind of upset about it, obviously. And, I did, you know, you exploded even more in the account. You know, I won't say you, cause you know, based on how you are, you don't look at it that way. But the account itself, like, just, it took off even more, and it gave it that, you know, kind of validity, so to speak, that you know, the MLB was aware of what was going on, and all of that. So I think, you know, like you said, it ended up being like a, you know, blessing in disguise in terms of exposure to help more people.
Yeah, I really think it did. And so, you know, God bless that whole dispute, and I really have a lot of respect for MLB for handling it the right way.
Yeah.
And I would love to see that become, you know, I was talking to a pitcher the other day who was basically saying that these were like, you know, like NBA dunks and stuff when they do all
yeah.
this stuff. And it's like, yeah, I mean, and that's what it should be. I mean, enjoy the game. I'm trying to teach, but I'm also trying to keep people excited about the game. That's all I really care about. I mean, it's not, if I can do that, and that's my legacy, is that I help people have fun and taught some kids something and then open doors for people. What better thing is that?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, especially with baseball as a game, as, you know, the MLB as a whole expanding, I guess, or getting better at marketing, you know, their players and what they're trying to do, you know, your account helps in that regard too. So at the time I was like, they're crazy if they don't themselves try to capitalize on what you're doing especially for the MLB as a whole. And widening the awareness for the game and all that kind of stuff. So I'm definitely glad it worked out, as I'm sure you are and everyone else.
The dark side of it is I actually spend more time doing that stuff, so it takes up a lot of time now. So it really gets
your hobby has grown into a full time job almost.
Yeah, kind of. It's a lot. So it's a lot of fun though, because it means I can help more folks. But it's definitely, yeah. I mean, all those tweets are mine. It's not like someone does them for me.
Yeah, no, I told you one day we were messaging each other, and I was like, I can only fathom what your DMs look like on that, and your notifications look like. You know, when you retweet something of mine, you know, my phone goes crazy, and, you know, I only have a few thousand followers. I can imagine what yours is like, so.
And I read them all. I mean,
I know, and I know you do, and that's why I tip my cap to even more. Like, you're really, time and time again, you show that you're about the people, the kids, the coaches, and that's like the best thing about it. So,
well, thank you.
I definitely think that they do, and that brings me to the next point. Honestly, in terms of, you know, your desire to help coaches, and now even, you know, help players get exposure. I would say what, about 3 weeks now? You launched the Flat Ground app.
It seems like 3 years, but yeah, it's
been
just under 3 weeks.
I guess I'll do the same thing with that. Like, what was your motivation for that? You know, we talked about your original Pitching Ninja account, but now Flat Ground. What was your main goal with that?
So my son, having played through, you know, travel ball throughout high school, I saw a lot of different players. I went to all the major showcases, played in all the major tournaments. I saw a lot of families that kind of, you know, struggled to have their kids play at that level with the expensive teams and the showcases being, you know, like $1,000 and $1,000 of travel there with hotels and flights and everything, mm-hmm. and taking time off work. Not, you know, I'm fortunate enough to be able to do it, and not, but so many people weren't, and their kids were really good players, and, you know, maybe they saved up a year's salary or, you know, whatever to give their kids that chance.
It's expensive.
Yeah, and maybe the kid had a bad day. So now they've wasted all that, and it might have been that kid's only shot. So what I thought, you know, seeing all this stuff and seeing, and it's one thing that I've always thought is that baseball shouldn't just be a rich kid's sport. It should be available to
absolutely
everybody. It's
yeah.
better for the game.
Oh,
and
my.
It's better for the game.
Yeah, you know, talk about, you know, getting more chances to have, you know, better players and, you know, such these talented, you know, arms and bats come through, you know, and get the exposure that they wouldn't have because they don't have the means, the money to do it.
Right, and in the U.S. it's become that. I mean, it, obviously Dominican Republic and Cuba and stuff, I mean, they're able to play with a paper bag and, you know, a ball, one ball out there that's been beat up. But here, kids are turned away because they see their friends with these expensive bats and gloves, and you know, they may not want to join the team because their parents can't afford the newest stuff. And they're not going to. Kids have pride, and they don't want to borrow other kids' stuff to go play. They want their own. And if you can play another sport that's less expensive, they may very well do it. So I tried to, you know, try to tear down those barriers by starting flat ground. I thought that there's some great, you know, I've seen some great exposure. Driveline does a great job with live at bats.
Yeah.
And getting their pitchers out there. But why should those be the only pitchers that get exposed to folks on social media? I knew that I have access to some of the best coaches around that follow my pitching Twitter, my Pitching Ninja account. I know that there's pretty much every major D1, actually every major college, whatever level they are, follows my account, as well as major league scouts and pitchers. And I was like, well, why don't I let everybody else, you know, it's great. I use Pitching Ninja mostly for major league guys, but why not give everybody else a chance to be seen, to get advice, and to get exposure for free?
I mean,
why are you have to pay all this stuff? Why can't I use my contacts for good and open them up to everybody and have people that actually, there are a bunch of people that don't even follow my Pitching Ninja account that are now on flat ground because they want to recruit, they want to do whatever, or they want to give advice. So it's grown a lot quicker than I probably thought it would when I started it, but I knew there was a need.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
It was important.
I'm only 24, and I was in high school. Let's see, I graduated in 2012, so not that long ago. I just think, you know, in those 7-8 years, how much has changed. If I had had, you know, something like this, Twitter was barely really going when I was at that age, but you know, it would have been huge. And you know, I was lucky enough to have parents that could afford it, like you were saying about you and your son. You know, the showcases and the scouting services, and they were great. You know, but I think if I had the ability to just kind of send a video out there and say, hey, you know, here I am, it would have been great. So I think it's awesome, you know, being not far removed from that myself, that what you're doing, I think it's great for the kids.
And not only that, but I think you get a better view of the player because they can post as many times as they want. It's not like this one time you get to see them and then you maybe get to follow up at a high school game. It helps colleges that don't have big recruiting budgets, they can sit back.
Yes, yeah, that too.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different things, and you can see a kid in their own environment, what they choose to put up there, versus that one day they might, I mean, I know my son had a stomach bug at one of the showcases he was at and was puking before he went out to pitch, and it's like, you know, his velo was down that day, that's life. I mean, but the coaches don't know that. When they have their guns up there, they're just judging you at that point in time. No one wants to make an excuse why they can't go out there.
Yeah,
everyone's
heard that whole, like, you know, I remember showing up to college freshman year on campus. Everyone has that, I can throw this speed, but I was hurt that day or whatever. So who want, so even if you have a legitimate reason, who's going to believe you or be like, oh, I've heard this before?
Nobody. And actually, as a guy, so I also coach high school ball. So one thing I will tell you is nearly everybody lies about how hard they can throw.
Oh, of course.
They don't know.
I was taught to take 5 miles an hour when I was in high school. I forgot who it was that told me, you know, take 4 to 5 miles an hour off of whatever someone tells you, and that's what they throw.
it's just about 100% true. Occasionally you'll see somebody that's 100% accurate. It's most of the time, it's like, no, I'm really throwing a lot harder than I did then. I made this adjustment. And this is one thing that you'll learn. It's very, very rare that one adjustment changes everything. Not impossible. I've seen it happen where it adds a few miles an hour. But it's very rare. It's mostly hard work, the stuff that you're doing. I think the strength and conditioning side is the most important thing for gaining velocity versus the get-rich-quick, I'm going to change my mechanics, and all of a sudden now I'm throwing gas versus before I wasn't. It's rare. It happens, but it's not as often that it happens.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it's a great segue to the next thing I wanted to talk about, you know, the training side of stuff. And you brought up driveline earlier. I think, you know, something that I think they get an unfair reputation from some people, and most people now know how, you know, good they are at what they do, but everyone thinks, oh, weighted balls, moving your arm fast. They have so much going on there You know, with strength training, Kyle Rogers is their head strength training guy over there. He's amazing. It's so much more than that, and it's a shame that some people label them as like that quick fix arm speed. And I remember, you know, myself personally, when I first heard of them, it was presented to me in that way. And my stance on them, obviously, as I did my homework and got to know them better, has done a complete 180. You know, the good things they're doing over there, but the strength training is so important. As you brought up, what would you recommend? Like, what would you say are the aside from the strength training, if you want to expand on your thoughts on that, that young pitchers should focus on in their training, you know, trying to throw harder, get better?
So it depends. Number one, I want to echo your comments on Driveline. I've known Kyle for a long time. We started together on various pitching boards and baseball boards back in the day when I was trying to get my kid and my kids that I coached better. And I saw this guy asking a lot of questions in a different way than other people had. So, I mean, you can tell he was a smart guy. And, you know,
oh, yeah, the way he thinks and speaks is you could tell right away.
Yeah, and the people that don't realize that are the people that are getting crushed right now. So either you don't have to agree with him. And you know, sometimes he doesn't put a smiley face on everything.
No, you don't have to, really. It's right. what results speak and the right way to do things speak. And sometimes you have to be blunt about it, and you can't be, you know, happy-go-lucky with everything. So I agree with you.
Yeah, and I mean, I actually love that personality where it's more like a like an engineer, where it's just I'm going to view things black and white, and then try to learn from mistakes and stuff. And he's just done it better than other people. And there's a bunch of people that get jealous from results. So I'm a big fan of what they do. I think that they're always pushing the cutting edge, and they're kind of hard to catch right now because they put a lot of money into R&D and learning more and more stuff, and then training from that you're going to have to, you're not going to be able to just not put in a lot of effort to catch up to that. It's really fun to see how they've grown, and you know, my hat's off to them.
Yeah.
The thing that so back to your original question, what I think that you like, and I think they would agree, and I think most coaches that don't have you know, that aren't trying to sell you something would agree, is that the first thing is to learn to throw athletically. I think throwing and pitching, too often people hear pitching mechanics, so they think I'm going to pitch mechanically,
mm-hmm.
and they, you know, raise my leg, do this, do that, and when you start teaching pitching mechanics before moving athletically, it makes no sense. So the advice that, for example, Trevor Bauer gave was
I was going to just bring that up. That's funny you mentioned that.
Yeah, I think he nailed it. I mean, play shortstop and throw the ball hard.
It's long keep it simple, yeah.
Right, exactly. I mean, the whole idea of like kids are like, how can I help my kid throw more strikes when he's 8 or 9? Like, don't freaking worry about it. How about that? I don't care if he doesn't throw strikes. Yeah, he may not pitch. He may be saving him a little bit, but have him keep throwing.
Yeah.
And then he'll figure it out. I mean, most 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds can't do a lot of things that adults can do, so... And their hands are smaller. They're using the same size ball. I mean, as an adult pitcher, it's tough as a kid. So don't hold them to that standard. Let them have fun. Let them be athletic and really emphasize that type of stuff. Throw the ball with intent. Throw the ball hard.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, there's more time for refining things later on.
Yeah, I you know, you kind of brought me to the next thing I wanted to talk about. Is just the starting early and and I say clean movement, not building clean movement, like you said, not being so mechanical, but just, like you said, intent. Like, that's a skill. Intent itself is a skill. And developing that at a young age is really key and can kind of help later on. It puts you in such a better position as a high school athlete if you had that that knowledge and that drive to throw an intent and have clean movements at that, you know, age of 9 or 10 years old.
Right. I would totally agree. I think you have too many parents that they don't want to see their kids fail, and there's nothing worse. I mean, as a parent of a pitcher, the worst thing to do is to watch your kid not be able to find the strike zone. It sucks. And when they're 8 and 9 doing that, yeah, it drives them crazy. You know, just throw strikes, let your defense work. But in the end, it's that advice actually hurts them. Yeah, you may be saving them at that age from embarrassment and your own embarrassment, but in the end, it pays off more if they're able to move athletically and then grow into the. I mean, obviously, control is important, command is important, and I think that people that emphasize that their hearts are in the right place too. It's just which comes first, And I think when you're that young, moving athletically has to come first. It just has to.
I like to say it, and I know a lot of other guys like to say it as well, you know, building the engine first, and then you put the driver in, and we learn how to drive what we have.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to stay on the road.
Of course.
You have to have command to get out, and anybody that thinks that you don't, that's crazy, too. I mean, the game isn't, you know, the pitcher isn't a thrower. He doesn't get up there and just throw his, you know, four balls. All of a sudden, you got a runner on first, and then you got another one and another one. You've got to be able to have command. So at some point, that comes in.
Yes, of course. It's like anything. It's being level-headed, and unfortunately, I think some people move away from that because it doesn't sell as well as being really one-sided with your opinions. You know, as a coach, I've seen that. Like some of the bigger names that, like, and I'm not going to mention names. That's what I'm here for. But some of the guys I've seen that are really one-sided, whether it's hitting, pitching, strength training, they try to really they use it as a business pitch. And it's like, how one-sided can I be? I want to be known as that guy. When it's the best coaches are usually level-headed, and they know there's a importance of both.
So, and I think that actually is a great point. In some places where I guess I have a little bit of an advantage, almost because I don't sell anything. It's not like I'm not selling. Hey, I have the answer for everybody. I have a bunch of answers for people, and depending on who you are, I have a different answer for you. I might not say, you know, weighted balls are the way to go for you. I'm not selling anything. I just want to bring various solutions to people, and we can find different fixes depending on who you are. A lot of times kids are, you know, they're not strong enough. I think strength and conditioning is very, very important, but sometimes you got to, you know, a monster out there. Maybe it's more mobility.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just explosiveness and not pure strength. So there's a bunch of different things that are solutions to. It's so hard to be one size fits all, and too many people market
as one size fits nobody, as I like to say.
Right. Yeah, I would say that's right.
It's crazy how one sided things get sometimes, and you know, it's great. You know, that I've seen you've, you know, retweeted or put out perspectives of everybody.
Yep.
You know, I will mention this name because it's a guy that I've talked to, and he's a great guy. Dustin from Location Nation.
He's a great guy.
He's a great dude, you know, and he's an example of a guy that, you know, talks a lot about command and motor learning. He has, like, a lot of cool stuff he talks about. And I've seen you, you know, put his stuff out and converse with him. And then I've also seen you talk to, we obviously mentioned Driveline, you know, guys that are, you know, a little more per se towards the spectrum, on the side of the spectrum of throwing hard and intent. So, you know, it definitely great resource to be able to kind of see all of those areas. And then obviously, you know, you put the strength coach stuff out there too, the mobility and the speed and strength training. It's all one package. It goes together.
That's right, and I'm glad you mentioned Dustin, because he gets a bad rap for being the command guy, but yet he made a career being a command guy. So,
but he's a good dude too. Like, he's not, and he's not one of those guys that has an agenda. He's just, that's what he believes in strongly, and you know, I've seen him say it before. Like, he understands you have to throw, you know, a certain velocity, but he just kind of comes from the side of, you know, people overlook this sometimes, and I want to make sure it has a, you know, exposure and people understand. So there's a difference.
I did a testimonial for his book, and that was my point. Is obviously you have to throw hard, and I think we'd be stupid to say that that's not the case, because you're going to get your kids never. I mean, Every college is the first thing they look at is a radar gun. It's just what they do. So by saying that that's not important, you're hurting the kids. But by the same token, once they're out there and they're pitching, you've got to get out and you've got to be in the, you know, you've got to know what you're doing. And to say that that doesn't matter is just, you know, it's a lughead mentality. You're just going out there like, oh, give me the ball, I'm going to throw it. There's way more to the game than that. And I think we should be more open-minded and listen to what people have to say.
Absolutely.
He was successful. And
not many guys pitch at the level he did, you know, get to the minor leagues and get into the system. So, you know, you got to listen to what he has to say just for that at a certain point, you know?
Right. Exactly. Now, I think depending on where you are in the spectrum, you may go more towards that camp or more towards another camp, but there's just not one right way to do it. To do anything.
Yeah, especially in strength training. I see it all the time. You know, there's the don't lift heavy folks, and there's the, you know, do this, 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 and this, and not that. I try to look at everything. Like, we use it all. And I think that's
actually why I like watching your stuff. I see different ways of solving problems that I would see that, you know, I want to give folks different different ways to attack different things. Mm-hmm. And you seem to think out of the box, and I like seeing it. I mean, it challenges everybody. And, you know, who knows? Everything that's out of the box isn't right, but sometimes you need to look at it and say, wait a second, that's different, but it's good, versus everything that isn't. Everything that I don't know is somehow scary and is wrong. That just can't be.
And it's okay to change. I've changed. I literally just gave you an example. I won't hide from it. When I first was presented, like when I first got in the industry about 3 years ago as a coach, I was presented Driveline by someone that was like, you know, this is no good, it's bad. And that was my first impression of them. And then you do your own homework. You make your own conclusions. Right. And you see, you know, what – make well thought out, you know, I guess you could say, decisions on things, and put more than just like the marketing end, put that aside and kind of see, you know, what they're doing. And they have a reason for everything. And I think that's that's the biggest thing too, is I always try to, you know, pride myself on that, is having a reason behind everything that you do, an explanation for it. And there's like a thousand ways to skin a cat. So what works for one guy might not work for the other. And like you said, strength guys, some guy might need more strength work, more speed, mobility on the pitching side, command versus velocity. They might need both. You know, that's the best way to go about it. And, you know, I know we definitely agree on that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you made Randy Johnson throw like Tim Lincecum or vice versa, they would both fail.
Yeah. It's like a mix of a little bit of, you know, one or the other. And that's the way I look at the training. I like to think of things as like a sliding scale, and it depends where the guy stands or falls on that scale. And, you know, you address it according to that. So it's the same thing with everything, whether it's strength, speed, pitching, general movement. It all works the same. You know,
I think that's the right way to look at it.
Can't have like a blanket approach to everything. Everyone's got to do things the way that work for them. So,
right.
You know, one last note on the training thing, and we kind of touched on it a little bit already. But, you know, in your experience with your own son and what you've seen, how important would you say is strength and speed training for pitchers specifically in terms of like explosiveness and translating, you know, on the mound?
I would say it's amazingly important. My son went from about 130 pounds to 195.
He worked with Ben Brewster, correct?
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ben,
he's amazing.
He's great. I mean, so he was another guy that Kyle, you know, I mentioned. I knew him from pitching boards. Same thing with Ben, except I saw Ben as a player. So Ben took himself as a freshman, throwing 72, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And he documented his work from that point to topping, now he's 98, I think.
Yeah, crazy.
And all the work he put in and all the various mistakes he made, it's all documented on, if you go to Let's Talk Pitching, he's Lanky Lefty over there, and it's one of the great reads and great stories about somebody who was told that he could never throw hard because he couldn't unlearn the motor.
I hate that.
Oh, and it was a pretty big-time name that told him he would never throw hard because you couldn't change arm action, and he did. And that's one of the reasons why I said, you know, I think my son may have been the first person to work with him. So
I don't know. Not to get off on a tangent, I don't know how you could tell somebody that. That blows my mind. But like
somebody on Flat Ground the other day was telling his 5'8" kid who posted his mechanics. I mean, he said, hey, do you have any advice? And the guy said, yeah, my advice to you is to play second base because there's no one wants a 5'8" pitcher. And I was like, seriously? That is one of my first guys that I blocked because that's not the attitude that anybody should take.
No.
Don't ask for advice. You've never even seen the kid hit. How do you know it?
I think Marcus Stroman would like a word with that guy.
Right.
And he actually he played second base too, so that's funny.
I start tagging all these kids, and one of them actually had worked with Ben, who I actually also knew for a long time. He's 5'8" and throws 98. Is in the Blue Jays organization now, Mike Pascoe.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked his butt off. And the first time I saw that kid throw, I was like, dude, your arm action's ridiculous. And he just got bigger and stronger. But there is no box that you can put someone in saying this height can't throw hard or, you know, or whatever, and stop. There's nobody that should be in the business of telling a kid that they can't, you know, reach their dream if they work hard. I mean, you know, it's going to take you maybe more work, but if you're willing to do it like Ben did,
yeah,
I'm never going to say you can't do something.
I can't, like, as a strength and speed guy, I can't imagine a kid walks in your door and he's literally here because you're known as someone who can make him faster, and you tell him, yeah, your genetics suck, you can't get faster. Like, how it's funny. I tweeted it yesterday, I think. You know, we have too much technology and info on, you know, the proper protocols of training and all that to ever make a claim that you can't be good unless you're naturally gifted. You know, it's insane. It can be done, and we've seen it done, and it's been done thousands of times. You know, I've seen kids that walk in my door day one, and this isn't even me trying to, you know, guess up my abilities. It's more so their, you know, testament to their work and, you know, the work that they put in. But they get faster, they get stronger, and they can change. Like, they can walk in as a, you know, 145-pound wet noodle with no, you know, good genetics whatsoever and change their career.
Right. I mean, same thing happened with my kid. He's always been a pretty hard thrower for his size, but once he got additional size on him, it made a huge difference. I mean, that's kind of groundbreaking when I saw it firsthand. I mean, it was obviously I was teaching him along the way, but to watch the development of your own kid and then other kids that I've also helped along the way and directed for, you know, to various strength and conditioning folks, and it makes a huge difference. So I would say it's probably the number one factor to me in velocity improvement is a very, very good strength and conditioning coach. Not just a coach, though. It's a commitment.
Yeah.
To the player's ability. And it's too many players, so everybody wants to have the coach, and I think the coach is going to get them there. But the coach is just a vehicle to help you. It's your...
You got to drive the vehicle.
Yeah, and if you don't do that, you ain't going nowhere.
Yeah, I'd say just a general, from my end, you know, if I had to make a recommendation to anyone listening, any players who are going to be listening, you know, strength, you know, you're young, you're a lanky kid, put the size and the strength on, and then from there, don't just be stuck at moving heavy weight, because if that were the case, you know, every power lifter would throw 99, or they would run a 6.5. So, you know, make sure, you know, you're doing the jump training and the plyometrics and being able to, you know, not build force first and then be able to, you know, display it as fast as possible, and you put that together with a good pitching coach and someone that can show you how to effectively use it, you're going to be in good shape.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. I also think, you know, somebody like Alan Jaeger, who I've become really good friends mm-hmm. with.
He's a great guy, too. I've talked to him a couple times.
God, I mean, you can't be a nicer guy, a guy that's more into helping people.
Yeah.
With no ulterior motive. I mean, the dude is just a really nice guy and believes in athletic throwing and letting your, you know, letting the arm eat and stay in shape versus the traditional, hey, we're going to take, you know what happened. What if you took 4 months off and then started to try to PR on everything you did?
You lose everything. Right. And you're going to get hurt. You're going to get hurt, first off.
You're going to get hurt, right.
You can't say, oh, my squat was 500. I took 4 months off. Let's go for 500 again.
Right. It just doesn't work.
There goes your back, or there goes your knee. Yeah. Something's going.
Right. And that's what I think that's what we do too much of. It's we view the rest period that, yeah, you shouldn't throw competitively year-round. I mean, that would be nuts. But by the same token, when we say rest, we don't mean play video games.
Yeah,
And sit on your butt and then go out and try to throw, you know, balls to the wall. It's just not the way it works.
Yeah. I think that's, like, the important part, too, of, you know, comprehensive training, that strength and speed and the pitching and the nutrition and everything. You can, you know, section off the parts of your year into what you're really putting your main emphasis on. So just because you're not throwing, you know, live bullpens for 2 months of the year, you're still doing something, whether related to throwing and your training. So you're just shifting gears.
Right. Yep, and you've just touched on it, and I think this what I hope people take from this discussion is that there's so many different aspects to pitching that anybody that markets it as there's this one answer is doing their players a disservice because there's so many factors of whether you're going to be good. And yes, there's some people that are genetically, athletically more talented than other people. And they may not have to work as hard. But that doesn't mean that's the end of the race and that you can't work harder in different ways to end up being, you know, being a better pitcher. It never should be an excuse to not work hard and you know, oh, he just made it because he was more talented. Well, you don't know how much work that other kid put in. And are you putting in that much work? And most things can be overcome through being smart and working. Yes, you cannot make yourself 7 feet tall and you know, but you can make yourself Muggsy Bogues in basketball and be really
yeah.
fast.
Yeah. I have an athlete. Yeah, I have an athlete that I train. He gets very upset. You see him walk in the door now. He's 20 years old, and he's probably all of 5'7" and a half on a good day. He's a middle infielder, William and Mary, and he runs like fastest kid I've ever seen. 6'3", 8", I think he's at. Wow. Insane. Anyway, but the point is, and I've known this guy, this kid since he's a 10, 11 years old, and seen the work he's put in, and people see him as the finished product, and they say, "Oh, you have great genetics, you're gifted," and it really aggravates him because he feels like it slights all the work he had to put in. And you can't assume. You don't know what the person did to get to the level that they are at. So you need to, like you said, you need to really get rid of that idea, that mindset that, the finished product is what it started as.
Right.
You
focus on yourself and getting yourself better.
Exactly. Worried about everyone else.
Especially being envious of somebody. That drives me crazy, too.
Oh, he's lucky, or he's...
he's lucky, or he's not that good. Well, you know what? Make it obvious that you're better. Twice as hard
In business.
Right.
Why are you better? Don't spend as much time worrying about what everyone else is doing and putting them down. Just win. Just go out and do what you got to do.
I have that with this whole flat ground thing. The biggest testimonials, I'm never going to ask anybody for a specific testimonial. I want to see what they honestly say. If somebody says, "Hey, you helped me find, X number of offers," or "I had no contact and now I have," but that's way better than me saying it. Me saying anything, I'm not going to market myself. It's just not what I want to do. It's not what I'm about. I want other people, if they feel inclined to do it, to do it. If they don't, I don't care. I'm just not going to be beholden to that. But I love hearing, people that are honestly excited about things. Same thing with someone worked with you and they said it, versus you say, you touting your own thing. You have to put the BS detector if you hear the person touting themselves.
Yeah.
Always.
Yep.
What do their athletes do? I mean, Eric Cressy working with Tim Collins. Saw that little guy, Tim Collins, about 5'5", 5'6", maybe 5'7". And the amount of work he did with him, you saw the transformation for Tim to make it to the major leagues. Fantastic.
And that speaks for itself. You don't need to tell. Eric doesn't need to tell people that.
Right.
It's out there. People see it. Like, oh, man, this guy really, really came from nowhere. Oh, he worked with this guy. All right. There you go. Now you know. It's that easy.
Exactly.
That's how I start. That's literally how I started. It was that same kid, the William and Mary guy. I'm only saying this just to give an idea of his story. I think he was like a 6'7" guy. Got him to like a 6'4", 6'5". He worked really hard for a few months, and he just told everybody, and that kind of helped put me on the map in New Jersey with baseball players and other athletes. So that's a shining example. I wasn't blasting it out to people. He told them.
Right, and when you post videos, you're not posting things, "Hey, come work with me." You're more giving ideas and then getting feedback.
I'm saying, "Hey, try this."
Right.
Yeah, that's literally,
Right, and if you were saying, "Hey, for $20, I can do this," then all of a sudden the BS detector comes on, right?
And there's a time and place, right? Like at the end of the day, at least me personally, this is how I make
a living.
That is how I make my living, and I actually experienced this last week. I put out the rotational program for free, and it blew up, and people were actually DMing me saying, "Hey, how do I pay you for this?" And I was like, "It's free." And I had no problem with that because it was something that would help people, and was really, it took me not a lot of time because it was just a matter of writing it down for a half hour because it's already in my head. And then I put something out a couple days later, like, "Hey, I'm going to do something that's going to take me a little more time, and it's going to be, more extensive. Would anyone be interested in paying for a program?" You let them decide.
Right.
And that's like the biggest difference between like I said, "Hey, like if I do something that takes me a little more work, I might charge for it because I'm spending, a few hours of my day on it. Like, would you be interested?" And they'll tell you if they are.
Right. And honestly, then you have to make a living. You have to be able to do it. But the better way to do it is the proof's in the pudding. You got to be able to.
Yeah, and I did it after. And that's an example. I don't think I tried to make any money or tried to sell anyone anything online I did a year and a half of just blasting out free stuff.
Yep.
Let people build reliability in what you do and know that you're good, and don't try to just kind of con them into buying something right away.
Right. Because if you do that, some people will do it. But most people, a lot of people will run if they realize that throughout the years you've seen them and they're putting out good stuff, then the stuff that they would be paying for later might be really, really good stuff because they've seen what you've done. They didn't have to pay for it. And they say you're a good guy. I mean, you're trying to help move the game forward. You're entitled to make money off of baseball. No one's saying you. No one at all.
Yeah, it's just the way you do it. It's like, hey, if he was good enough to put out a year and a half's worth of free content and not make a nickel off of it, I'm pretty sure, you know, he's going to put even better stuff out as he goes, and it's something I'd be willing to pay for. And I look at it as, you know, what's free from me and what's charged are the same quality.
Right.
It's just, you know, I might charge for it. I might charge for it because it just, maybe I put a little more time into it. It was longer or it was more extensive. But otherwise, you know, it cost me nothing to spend 15 minutes typing out a caption for a video of what I'm doing in the actual gym and seeing if it helps somebody.
Right. And I think that is the key where some people want to market first, and everything they do is marketing, and I think those people are trying to help, but they're also not putting themselves in other people's shoes and really understanding how do you get to that athlete. It's not, people's guards are always up if somebody's selling.
You need to lower the barriers to
right.
You know, I look at it as you're on one side of the island as a business owner or a coach, and the athletes or coaches are on the other side. And, you know, are they going to just try to run and leap to you and pay for something right away? Or you have to build, you know, throw a bridge out or build a really solid, you know, connection between the two sides that they've, you know, been walking over and back and forth on for, you know, a couple months. And they trust that it's going to, you know, they're going to get there every time and they'll be willing to do it.
Right. I mean, nearly all the time if someone comes up to me in a store and says, can I help you? Almost all the time. Like, no, I'm just looking.
Yes.
Feel like they're selling something to me.
Yes. I think that, you know, the marketing, it's another good segue into something that I want to talk about. Speaking of marketing and with Flat Ground and the young athletes, any recommendations from you on what the young players can do to put themselves in not only a good position to be noticed, but that once they are, that there's nothing, you know, that they've said or done or they've made themselves look bad, so the coach just, you know, kind of stays away from them, I guess, if that makes sense?
Yeah, well, that does. I think the big thing is almost treat it like you're a coach looking at your own feed.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything out there, one of the beauties of having this on Twitter is that the coach can go back and click on you and see all your various your tweets and how you hold yourself out to everybody else, what you're saying. And if you want to be known as a hard worker, I mean, maybe good to show that you're working sometimes, as opposed to, you know, every tweet being a party.
Yeah.
Or just also watch your language and watch how you treat people.
Being careful
what
you say, yeah.
Life, right?
Yes.
In life, it should be that way.
Yeah. I put out a video of one of the guys I work with. I was trying to help. He's an indie guy. I was trying to help him get signed. And that's another beautiful thing of social media. Some of the guys we've seen that we know on the hitting side of things get picked up lately for jobs, you know, change your life. So that's another great thing about the marketing side of the social media. But I had one of the guys that I know that just picked up a job with a team. You know, first question he DM'd me was, you know, is he a good guy?
Right.
And that kind of one led me to think that, you know, he liked what he saw. So that was his next question. And it's important. And I can honestly, you know, put my reputation on the line and say this he's an amazing kid. You know, he treats people with respect. He shows up on time. He appreciates the time I put in with him, and he just carries himself the right way. So you're willing to, you know, you're willing to put your neck on the line and as a coach and say, hey, yeah, he's a good dude.
Yep. And you know, obviously, not everybody that ends up getting signed or getting drafted or whatever are good dudes, but you get more chances if you're a good dude.
Yeah, if you're on the fringe, right. He will put you over.
Right. You know, if you're a great dude and you're a terrible pitcher, you're probably not going to do that well. But if you're a crappy dude and a great pitcher and you start sucking a little bit, then all of a sudden you may be on the fast road out of there.
Especially these organizations look into everything.
Right.
Colleges, pro. Yeah.
I mean, like, how are you going to work with your teammates? How are you going to do in the weight room? You want somebody that shows that they're committed.
Yeah. Absolutely. I guess that brings you to my next point. I guess biggest piece of advice could be for, you know, players, business owners, trainers, you know, social media. Like, what's the, in your opinion, you know, the best way to go about if you're looking to build, you know, exposure to your business or just help people or as a player you're trying to build your exposure? Like, what would you say is the biggest key? Or if there's multiple, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I would say as a business person online, I think the biggest thing is to come at it with more of a servant mentality than a I'm going to push stuff on you mentality. Mm-hmm. So what can you do for other people versus what can they do for me? If you start viewing it as a way to make money and that's the only thing, that's your only view, people are going to smell that a mile away.
Yeah.
If you view it as I'm going to help people and as a byproduct of that, I'm going to make money and you're going to get better, it's a totally different way of looking at it. And I think too many people get online with the idea of pushing stuff at people and not listening to what people have to say in return, and not really, there's no relationship building when they get on there. They're viewing it almost as like just putting tweets or putting Instagram posts or whatever out there without ever hearing what's coming back, and they're just throwing crap at the wall versus having a conversation.
Yeah.
I think the best thing you can do is listen.
Yeah. And even if you wanted to look at it from like, hey, you're trying to build a business, what's the best way to do it? It makes no sense, honestly. Like, put it this way. What is the best way to improve? If you're looking to improve your engagement and your following eventually because you want to make money off of it, the best way to do that is to put free stuff out because people are going to actually have something to look at.
Right.
Like, you're not going to be able to build a following if you're trying to charge everybody for everything when you have 100 followers.
Right. But unfortunately, the way that most people do it is they have 100 followers and they're going to pick a fight with somebody who's big in the industry,
mm-hmm.
and get them to respond, and then somehow, they think they're going to win ultimately when, that's a way to get noticed, but do you want to get noticed that way? I mean, you may be noticed as an asshole.
Yeah.
It's not great exposure.
Like you said about the testimonials, let people tell you. Like,
right.
I'm on Twitter now actively for like probably a year and a half now in terms of this kind of stuff, and I didn't really think or have a moment where I said, wow, this is kind of turning into something, until I started getting DMs from people, big fan of your stuff. I'm like, what? like you're a fan of me? Like, hey, love what you're doing, can't wait to see the podcast grow. People will tell you if they want to hear from you or if they like what you're doing. Just listen to them. They'll go out of their way.
Totally agree. I mean, and that's why I was saying before, it's like, I still don't know. I mean, I love doing what I do.
I couldn't tell you either, personally. I couldn't tell you either.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what makes you make it and what makes you not. I mean, I try to be a good guy out there. Occasionally I get cranky and snap at somebody, but that's kind of fun, too. I don't hold a grudge. I mean,
you do it with the intention of protecting the good people. That's a difference.
Right. Yeah, and that's generally my goal, is to make sure that people are, like, I mentioned trying to get content out there, but the biggest thing is having to sort through the content. Like, everybody gets – marketing works to people sometimes and works to their detriment. So they may buy into something because this guy marketed, you're going to gain 5 to 10 miles an hour, where I can sort through it and say, you know what? Somebody may gain 5 to 10 miles an hour on this program. It's probably not you, because of the way you're moving and the way – there's other things mm-hmm. you have to do before you're going to be able to do that. But it's not everybody can gain 5 miles an hour. It can't be, because then Jordan Hicks would join this program and all of a sudden be throwing 110. That mm-hmm. can't happen.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
you
got to use your brain, and a lot of people don't. They just fall for marketing.
Yeah, no, people like you said, and I think, I asked you if there was a moment where you said, oh, this is getting big. I think when you do it the right way and it's it's a traditional – not the traditional way of doing it, where you're trying to blow up right away, and it's homegrown, and it kind of just happens naturally. There is no moment like that, because it's just steady. Like, it's not like one day you woke up and, you went viral. It's just one foot after the other, step forward. It slowly turns into something, and just from my own perspective, like I said, this rotational thing. I made a program for some guys that I worked with, and I said, hey, maybe some people can get use out of it. So I said, hey, I have this program and I don't want to be interested. And then next thing I know, it had like 500 likes and I had DMs all over the place. So people will tell you if they want to, Like, it's, and I'm like, hey, it's free. And people are asking me how you pay for it. Like, that's the kind of, relationship you want to have as a business owner with people who follow you. Like, you want to know that they think you are helping them enough to be willing to pay for something you're not even asking to get money for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and the funny thing, my goal was never to get big, because I don't even know what that means.
Like, yeah.
My goal was to just put good stuff out there. It's still my goal. I mean, if I become somebody who's not putting good stuff out there or just being a jackass because I think my way is right and I'm never listening to anybody else, And I don't want to be big that way. I want to be big by showing people how to do it right on social media, by helping kids out, by helping schools out, by finding kids that may be, you know, kind of falling through the cracks and making relationships that way, or by making people bigger fans of baseball. And that's something I hadn't touched on. But really, my account, it started more educationally, but then I realized that pitchers want an identity. They want a place to go to where they can watch all this fun stuff.
Yeah.
Learn pitch grips, learn, talk to major leaguers. And if that's all it is, then that's great too. I mean, I want the game to be successful. I want pitchers to have an identity and to have fun at the game. And if you have fun, you're gonna try to get better. You're going to work. You're gonna work harder. You're gonna want to learn different things. And if they make the game crappy and boring, then nobody's going to want to do it. So
yep.
Part of the thing is making it fun.
Yeah, no, I think that speaks volumes, and it's the reason why it's gotten so big. Is it's just somewhere people can go, and you know, baseball didn't really have that. Like, you know, it needed somewhere, pitching especially, you know, somewhere to go to, like you said, have an identity and say, hey, like, where can I go watch some nasty pitches? Or, you know, it's got a bunch of different value to it. It's for the casual fan who wants to, I have friends that look at your account that are just there to see awesome, you know, nasty pitches. And I have coaches that follow you to try to learn things. So it's great that it has that dual, you know.
Yeah, I think the most amazing thing is when I hear from MLB guys who are saying, you know, oh my God, this is so awesome to see this on there, or stuff like that. And it's like, that wasn't ever the reason why I started this, but it's awesome to see that because they enjoy it too.
Yeah.
And they want to, you know, they want people to view it as they're not statues and robots, they're people, and they have fun at the game, and they want to be known for the stuff they do as well. So I think it's almost full circle. It helps younger players identify or just think that things are really cool and amazing, and shows how talented some of these guys are, and maybe helps them aspire to it. But it helps the MLB guys relate more to the kids and have fun at the game, and even among each other, to brag about how many times they've been featured.
Yeah, I've seen some of that.
Yeah, so I mean, that stuff's cool too. I guess it's whatever everybody wants it to be. I'm happy to be, but I just like doing it.
Yeah. I guess that kind of covered my last question. Is like, you know, where you want to go, where you want to go from here with it. I guess just continuing to help people and give, you know, the players a chance to get exposure, but also a place to learn with both apps, really, or both accounts. Exactly, I'm sorry.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I love the way Flat Ground has exploded. That happened way quicker than I thought it would happen. I just was amazed. And I think it's already done amazing things for folks. The kid from the Netherlands getting 25 off.
Yeah, that was crazy. You
know, that's crooked. It was nuts. But you know, other players that they got better during their senior year. They don't have any offers. And you know, that 6'7" kid who was on there the other day throwing 88. He might have been throwing 80 a few months ago, but now he's 6'7" and throwing 88, and he's a senior, and he's going to be throwing a lot harder than that. Why do these kids fall through the cracks? Is it because there's a race to get your recruiting class done, and people don't pay attention, and they should. And I hope to keep uncovering those type of people because I think that's the way I can help baseball the most.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome, and I'm excited to kind of see you know, it grow, and you know, hopefully 5 years from now we're looking at like the newest, well, I guess the new way that's kind of taking over and making it easier for kids to get exposure. So it's going to be awesome to continue to watch. So
thanks. I hope so. It already feels like 5 years, to be honest.
So yeah, really, I bet.
It's been kind of amazing.
Yeah. So I just want to say thank you for coming on. You know,
hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's a great conversation. I think we got a lot covered. So definitely excited for this to get out there. You know, it'll be out Thursday, so look forward to that, and look forward to keeping in touch with you and seeing how, you know, the progress of Flat Ground and Pitching Ninja.
Awesome, man. Thank you.
Thank you for coming on. I'll talk to you, Rob.
All right. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Muscles and Management Podcast, brought to you by Challenger Strength. I'm your host, Jerry DiFilippo, helping you build your body and your business.